Bill Buckmaster with you. Man, we've got a busy hour, so we're going to get right into it. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing on the other side of the glass. Thank goodness. The first cool morning, Tom Fairbanks, in 3 or 4 months. It was 57 degrees out in the garden at the Buckmaster house this morning.
That's extraordinary. Well, you know, it's going to be in the 60s again tomorrow morning, and then after that, the Weather Service says expect it to be in the low to mid-70s, which still is not bad.
Not bad, but the air quality is still not where I would like it. Smoky skies still around, but hey, one step at a time. Buckmaster, bringing people together on the radio and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go right to the Live Line. Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, with us. Councilman, how are you today?
Doing pretty good, but your little comment there about the smoke and things is probably why my eyes are watering about 5 minutes after I start running every morning now. I was wondering if something was blooming, but it's the blooming fires over in California, right?
It is. 2 days ago, it was really bad. Yesterday, a little bit better. So bad that I had to use eye drops even before the program began yesterday so I could even see Tom on the other side of the glass. But and I had a headache all day from the smoke. I'm very sensitive, as listeners to this program know. I'm very allergic to kind of wood smoke. So it's been a tough summer.
Yeah, and it's not letting up over there. My gosh, you look at the hotspot maps, and it's the entire blasted state. It's crazy.
It is. All right, let's get right into the COVID-19. You had an op-ed yesterday in the Arizona Daily Star about these, I think there's three high-rises around the university, potential hotspots. Generally, we heard today the University of Wisconsin, Madison, paused all face-to-face teaching. I wonder, Steve Kasachek, if we are going down that path.
Well, we may not be far from it, frankly. The U of A has not done testing off campus to any great degree. They have. We do know, though, that they've done a couple of sororities. I say a couple, there are four, and each of them are between 25% and 40% positive. The testing I did was in the student housing towers. They're the private apartment complexes, and they were just sitting out there. Nobody was testing them. Neither the university nor Pima County Health. I worked through Chuck Huckleberry, Francisco Garcia, and Terry Cullen over at the county, and said, "Look, I've got a group that can go in there, and we'll even do door-to-door testing." The first go around, we did 180. The first go around, we did 255 tests, and it was 29 of them that came back positive. So it's over a 10% positive rate. That does not include roommates, by the way. That's just the kids who got tested. Two nights ago, we did another 184 over in that same area, and we'll have the results today. But that is, you've got 2,000, 3,000 kids living stacked on top of each other in these multi-story congregate settings, and I use the phrase because that's what became that's the phrase that became popular when we were talking about Sapphire and some of the assisted living facilities here in town. And everybody was concerned that you can't have bunches of people living together because the infection will spread like wildfire in those conditions. Bill, when I called the management of these places, and they were, so let me tick them off: Soul, Iluna, Aspire, Urbane, Two Hubs, and a place called Olive. So there are six or seven of them over there that we're testing in. And they were perfectly willing to let us come and do the testing. I was disappointed to hear that they weren't limiting the rooms to one student per room until all this calmed down. They are also don't have any protocols in place for deep cleaning in a room if a kid tests positive. They're also not providing isolation rooms over there. And so the general consensus is that if somebody gets sick, he or she will just have to advise the roommates that, hey, I'll be down for the count for a while, and you might want to go get tested. So this is a real issue. You mentioned Wisconsin. That's happening at Iowa, at Iowa State, North Carolina. I mean, it's all over the country. Oregon, University of Oregon, just went to all hybrid, all remote through the end of this semester. And I guess the question, the rhetorical question, would be, can we or should we really be surprised? We have about 25,000 students that will soon be coming onto campus. But right now, because of the teaching model, where they're still in phase one on campus, which means only the students who have to be there for things like labs or dance classes, those kinds of things where you can't do it remotely, now the other 25,000 kids who aren't on campus are doing their studying in these towers, in these apartment complexes, and in these dorms and sororities off campus. That's how it's going to spread. I have been around Main Gate after hours. I know that there are restaurants that sell alcohol, perfectly legal in terms of the governor's proclamation and the reopening. But kids are not wearing masks, they're not social distancing, and they're in huge groups over there. So this is likely going to get worse before it gets better. And the testing that we did and over the last week weekend and the day after Labor Day really was just sort of highlighting the fact that you can do all the testing you want on campus, but that's like 6,000, and there are still another 20, 25, or 30,000 that are off campus that are being unaddressed.
Well, the people in town here who don't have a connection to the U of A in any way are really concerned, as you know, Steve Kasachek, and they're really concerned. These numbers have been going down. We've done a really good job, but now you can start to see with what you have discovered with your testing and the way we're going. I don't like this direction. I'm telling you, I don't like it, and the people in town don't like it.
And I think that you shouldn't like it, nor should the people in town like it. I've been in touch with plenty of people who live in the neighborhoods immediately surrounding campus. That's part of Ward 6. And whether it's Sam Hughes or Feldman's or Rincon Heights, Blenman Elm, Catlin, you name the neighborhood, they've got student mini dorms in their neighborhoods. Some of them have sororities or fraternities in their neighborhood or private apartment complexes that because of their proximity to campus, they're housing primarily students. And they're seeing the keggers, they're seeing the big parties. And so another thing that we are doing is we've got TPD partnering up with UAPD and going out and citing when they find these large parties that are happening. The sad reality, though, is that the Tucson Police Department and UAPD, they've got other situations they're dealing with, too. And so a call for a loud party is not going to jump to the top of the priority list necessarily. And so you've got this opportunity or vulnerability for community spread. The group that I'm – another flaw in what the university has been doing is that, you know, they were saying, we're going to test everybody and make sure they're negative before they move into their on-campus dorm. Well, that's great, but they're the rapid antigen tests, the rapid result antigen tests, that have a poorer rate of reliability than the PCR tests that we're running. You just saw over the weekend that the athletics department had 7 false positives out of a soccer team that they had shut down, and then until they did the retest with a PCR test and found out, the diagnostic test, and found out that they were false positives. You can just as easily have false negatives. And so the whole system is flawed in multiple ways. The biggest gap that I saw and am trying to deal with is these off-campus private apartment complexes that are housing literally hundreds and hundreds of students. Just before your show, I was on the phone with Francisco Garcia, Pima County Health Director, and he has asked me to continue this testing in these off-campus towers. Pima County is reaching out, and they are picking up the ball for some of the other apartment complexes in the surrounding neighborhoods. So now it's on the radar screen. But it should have been on the radar screen 3 weeks ago when kids started arriving back into town. And my opinion is that the university, while they did the right thing in telling kids you can't move into your dorm until you test negative, number one, those should have been diagnostic tests and not antigen tests. And number two, they should be saying right now, today, to any of the kids who are living off campus anywhere, whether it's in a tower or a private residence, you need to show a negative test result from 48 hours before you come into campus when we open up the classrooms. And that's something they can still do. And I've shared that with some of the university folks, and I hope it's a policy that they implement.
So before we take the break here, and I've got other subjects to deal with here, but the bottom line, is there a threshold level that Dr. Robbins and Dr. Carmona have set here before they do make the decision that they would have to go back to all online? What do you hear?
I hear that they are looking at multiple different metrics. There is not one box that they're going to check. They're looking at hospital capacity and ventilator use and percent positives, and there are multiple things that they're looking at. So no, there's not one. Once we check this last box, we're shutting it down. I think that their sense right now is that with the escalation in numbers, and they are escalating exponentially, the way that we're seeing at other institutions around the nation. I think there's a heightened degree of concern, and they had a press conference yesterday that was a day early, and I think that they usually hold them on Thursdays, and I think that indicates that with the numbers that we're seeing, the escalation that we're seeing in the off-campus areas and on campus, frankly, they're probably huddled up right now talking about what's our next step.
All right, we're going to pause right here with Councilman Steve Kasachek. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We are so proud to have Silver City in Grant County as one of our legacy sponsors, been with us almost since the beginning of our 10-year run here on the radio. It's time to start planning to visit Silver City, so you'll be ready when the Land of Enchantment is once again ready for out-of-state visitors. They're not yet. We've got our fingers crossed that things are going in the right direction in New Mexico. You can start that planning by visiting their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org, for places to stay and many things to do. Be right back with Steve Kasachek.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And with us on the live line is Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman. Councilman, is the council reconsidering support for the Central Business District downtown and what is known as GPLET, the Property Tax Abatement Program?
They're two different things. The Central Business District is it's a geographic area that is defined by certain metrics that are required by the government before you can offer a tax incentive called the GPLET. And so we are considering a few things. Number one, redrawing the map. It's not as large as it could be, but some neighborhoods don't want to be included because they don't want to see attractive incentives to upscale development in their area. So negotiating the perimeter of the map, the boundaries of the map is a better word, is one of the conversations that's happening. The second one is, what does the GPLET really look like, and has it served its purpose? Should we sunset it? Should we draw conditions around how it's used and when it's used? That's a larger conversation, and so the very short answer is yes, we are having that conversation about both of those issues. What we told the city attorney and our planning people last night, and city manager Ortega, was bring us back. We asked several questions. Bring us back the answers to these questions on the 22nd of September, and we'll finalize the conversation. One of the concerns that I've got is that we require, before somebody gets this tax incentive, we require that they go through an independent third-party analysis of their project. And the reason we do that is because, according to the state constitutional gift clause, we can't give somebody an incentive where the project doesn't guarantee a greater value to the taxpayers going forward than what we just gave away. What I have learned is that nobody's tracking that. And so before I sign on to an extension of the GPLETs, I want to be sure that whether it's the city finance department or the county treasurer or the JLBC up in Phoenix, somebody needs to be going back annually and making sure that when Hotel X, who got the GPLET, said that we're going to provide 150 new jobs, making X amount of money, generating X amount of tax back to the region, that they're actually doing that in 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 years from down the road, so that they're not benefiting from a tax incentive that is actually costing the taxpayers more money than what we're getting back. So that's going to be critical for me. I know some of the other council members want to do things such as mandate that the developers provide transit passes or low-income housing or one thing or another. I don't think those are as big a deal as some of the others do, and the reason for that is because GPLETs are 100% discretionary. It's not as though if we give it to you, we have to give it to Tom Fairbanks too. We can take each project on its own merits and say, you know what, this is a big international student housing developer that you guys could finance this yourself. versus a small local hotel like the downtown Clifton that got a small GPLET, that we want to say, you're a local builder, and we want to incentivize you. So the conversation's happening. I hope the council can kind of keep it on track and understand that these are discretionary. We don't know what's around the corner with respect to the economy and COVID. And so I think it would be a mistake to completely eliminate the option. And yet, let's make sure that, number one, we're tracking the benefits, and number two, that we keep in our back pocket the reality that these are discretionary and some projects simply don't need it in order to thrive.
All right. Was the scooter program renewed last night?
Yeah, it was. And you know how I feel about that. and so I said to the council, look, this was on consent. And the consent agenda is something that, unless you want to have a particular discussion about it, you have to, if you want a particular discussion about it, you have to pull it off for that special discussion. Bill, I've lost 3-6-1 votes on the scooters. And so I said to the group last night, I'm not going to pull this off consent just to lose another 6-1 vote. But my feeling is this. If we have still got outdoor swimming pools shut down where you're swimming two lanes apart in chlorinated water because we feel that's unsafe, why would we possibly think that sharing scooters from one rider to the next for bar hopping downtown with 30,000 new U of A students in town makes any sense at all? So I invited the rest of the councils. I said, if one of you guys wants to pull this off to consent and have that conversation and pause the pilot program, you know, stop it until we get COVID under control, go ahead and do that. I'll totally support the notion. Nobody did. I think it's totally inconsistent. I think the council looks foolish for being inconsistent in the way we're treating these very, very likely vectors for community spread. Everybody knows that Razor, the company, is not going in and cleaning these things down with EPA-approved sanitary cleansers between rides. And yet we won't let you swim next to somebody in an outdoor swimming pool. So I think it's stupid. I think that the council made a mistake. But I was not inclined to simply pull it off, have the say what I just said to you, and lose another 6-1 vote. As far as I'm concerned, they still own the issue. And I hope that it doesn't exacerbate the spread of COVID.
All right. Robert's been waiting on the live line. Let's see if we can work him in. Robert, what's your comment, please?
Hi, Steve. I'm a constituent, but just two comments. This flu for the fall and winter is going to attack us, and it's going to commingle with this, possibly creating yet another shutdown. You have an impossible task of setting a budget, coming up with the money for your budget for next year. We're all taken care of this year because it was all money generated last year. So, and with the students not coming in and there's nobody on the streets paying gas tax, do you visualize a horror story?
Okay. Do you visualize a horror story, Steve Kasachek?
It's a completely legitimate question, Bill and Robert. We are looking right now at a approximately $40 million deficit at the start of next fiscal year. That's not knowing what's going to happen with respect to a resurgence or the the flu-COVID deal that he's talking about correctly. I'm very concerned about the budget, and I said this during our review of the city manager yesterday. I said, you know, we've got some very difficult budget conversations that are coming up. We benefited to a tremendous degree by getting almost $96 million in federal money to help us navigate through the current COVID issue. But as if you follow the news at all, you know that the conversation is bottlenecked back in D.C. now about another round of those. There were some FEMA dollars there, so there were some federal monies coming in. But I'll say this also: as difficult as the economic conversation is going to be, and as difficult as it was this time, at some point you can't just keep relying on printing dollars either. I mean, because there's an inflationary effect. And so this is not just a city of Tucson economic issue. This is a national and international economic conversation that's happening. And I'm concerned on the local level, but I'm concerned on the national level as well. We have an election coming up in November that people need to participate in, and the results of that will have direct implications for how COVID is managed going forward from an economic standpoint and from a public health standpoint. Robert makes an excellent point, and yes, it's a significant concern of mine.
And Mr. Ortega, was this a contract review? Quickly, please.
Yeah. We have the option to renew his contract annually, and he has the option to ask for that to be done in executive session or out in public. In executive session, I can say without violating the law that we gave him high marks, and I think he deserves them. And I think Mike and his team, he hasn't done it single-handedly. He's put together a really quality team, and I hope they stick around because we're going to need all the good hands on deck that we can muster.
All right, Steve Kasachek, thank you very much. Stay safe. Thanks.
You too, Bill. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Thursday edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. You know, speaking of green things, it felt so good out in the garden this morning, upper 50s in our backyard. And I was thinking, yeah, this is about getting ready now for maybe some fall color in the backyard, and Green Things is the place to go. The 13-acre site has so many, well, everything you can imagine green. Check it out, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Very helpful staff will work you through it and help you get some beautiful things for your garden. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two go-to websites. Let's go to On the Live Line right now to Vail, Arizona, and Dr. David Levy's observatory. Dr. Levy is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science. He's the former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of Sharing the Sky Science Education Organization. He's also one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. Dr. Levy, how are you today?
Well, fine, thank you. And I understand that you know a little bit about volcanoes in the Northwest of this,
well,
this country.
We had a great trip up to the Northwest, and we're lucky to get up close and personal with Mount Rainier. You never know with the weather. We had a couple of very good days. One day it was cloudy and at the base and overcast, misting, and by the time we got halfway up the road on the sunrise side, there was the big mountain, and it was absolutely spectacular.
Did you feel any tremors, earth tremors?
No tremors, but I think
apparently very frequent there.
Very frequent. Of course, you know what is just to the south of Mount Rainier is Mount St. Helens.
Yeah, but Mount Rainier is considered one of the decade volcanoes in the world with a high probability of eruption this century.
Wow.
Very high. And if it does, it's about twice the size of Mount St. Helens, and it actually could do a lot of harm to Seattle if it erupts, or when it erupts.
Wow, I know, I think I read there was an eruption perhaps in the late 1890s at Mount Rainier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what was exciting, though, to David to see is the Edmonds Glacier, which you know is on the east face, which doesn't get as much sunlight, just gets the morning sun, and it's still very, very glaciered. And it was great to see. But I'll tell you, on the other side, the sunrise side, the west side, there's not a lot left there of the glaciers.
Yeah, I know. It's been such a warm summer. But I did send you a photograph of the mountain that I took from an airplane. I don't know if you got it or not. If not, I could try sending it again. But it was one of the most beautiful scenes. I was really pleased that the pilot flew us around Mount Rainier. To bring us to astronomy, the Earth isn't the only object in the solar system with volcanoes. Jupiter's moon Io has almost constant volcanic eruptions.
So 24/7 almost there's an eruption.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think so.
What kind of a summer has this been for observing? It certainly has been a very dry summer, a monsoon that didn't show up. So has that improved your observing situation?
Well, not really, although I did a lot of all-night observing sessions so far. I think about 15 of them this summer, in which I was able to do some of the comet searching that I love, observing the Perseid meteors, and really enjoying what I've been doing. And however, we did get a tenth of an inch of rain yesterday.
Wow.
So we're not doing too badly.
How about Comet Neowise?
Comet Neowise, that was a real shot in the arm for those of us who love the night sky. And I was able to get pictures of it and viewing of it. When I first saw it on the morning of July the 5th, just moving my binoculars down from the star Capella as it was rising, and it was a full moon night, and it was already well into twilight, but the comet was bright as anything, and really, really wonderful to see. Really a sight to see.
It's going away in the, so it's kind of waning away from us right now?
Oh, yeah. So yeah. We're moving away from the sun and away from the Earth, and it's barely visible with a telescope now.
All right. It's time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month on the Buckmaster Show. What do you have for us this month, David?
Okay. The theme for this month is darkness, because I think a lot of us have a natural fear of the darkness. I do not. I've always loved the darkness. I've always loved going out at night in the dark and enjoying the night sky, because the darkness is when you can see the sky. My quote this month is going to be what I think are the four most beautiful lines in the English language. Despite the fact that I did my PhD on William Shakespeare, this was not written by Shakespeare. It was written instead by Thomas Gray, and I think it's the most four most beautiful lines in the language. The curfew tolls the knell of parting day. The lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea. The plowman homeward plods his weary way and leaves the world to darkness and to me.
Hmm. Why do you suppose, you know, growing up, kids kind of are afraid of the dark. I guess that wasn't your case.
No, it wasn't my case. Because I always, whenever the darkness came, I always wanted to go out and look at the night sky, because it's only in darkness where you can see the sky. And, of course, as a teenager, I really fell in love with Simon and Garfunkel, Hello, Darkness, My Old Friend.
Mm-hmm.
And but I've always had an affinity for the darkness, because that gave at least the opportunity to see the cosmos. And that has really been a lifelong friend of mine.
All right, Dr. Levy, always a pleasure. Our love to your lovely wife, Wendy.
Thank you, and she sends her best to you, too. If you didn't get that picture, I'll send it to you again.
No, for some reason, I didn't get it. We actually posted up on my Facebook page a really nice picture as we were leaving Seattle with the sun was setting, so we had a real nice view out the window of Mount Rainier, but I do look forward to seeing what you've got. So send it along.
Okay, I'll send it again to you.
Okay, thank you. Dr. David Levy with his monthly visit on the Buckmaster Show, and we will see him again in October. So Buckmaster takes a pause right here. We'll be back with Attorney Don Luce right after this.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Guests appear on the Buckmaster Show on our live line, courtesy of Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Joining me in studio, Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group, with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor and author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are in their second printing. And Don, thanks for, first of all, great to see you.
It's good to see you, Bill.
Thanks for sending along a real nice review of your book on estate planning that one of your clients sent along. And I think the whole COVID, the pandemic, has sent a lot of people to offices, legal offices, to say, maybe it's that time.
Well, you know, unfortunately, it gets people thinking about mortality and serious illness and whether they've actually done enough planning to provide for that. So we've seen a lot of people come in that we haven't seen for years who want to update their estate planning.
Is it a scary process for people?
Of course. They have to consider what would happen if they were unable to make decisions for themselves, who would make those decisions for them, what the decisions would look like. Yeah, it's very scary.
But very necessary.
Necessary, yes.
I want to talk about what happens, and hopefully we will have a COVID-19 vaccination program in place perhaps by the end of the year. What about employers and even states mandating vaccinations? Let's begin with the employer end of things. Could an employer say, if you're going to work here, I want to see proof that you have had vaccination for COVID?
You know, of the two, the government mandating it versus the employer mandating it, this is the more difficult of the two questions.
That's why I started with it, because I think the state is, that one's pretty cut and dry. I don't think they could, just guessing here, I don't think a state could mandate that.
I would take the opposite side of that. But anyway.
Oh, okay. All right.
Let's talk about employers.
Okay.
So we'll start with the assumption that we have a vaccine that is effective. Okay.
Right.
We'll start with that assumption. Because if you have an ineffective vaccine or one that isn't very good, then you would undermine the reason why the employer would require its employees to be vaccinated, and that is to provide a safe workplace. So if you start with the assumption that we have an effective vaccine, and then you look at the duty that every Arizona employer has, which is to provide a safe workplace environment for its employees, the question becomes, can an employer meet its duty to provide a safe workplace environment without mandating that its employees get vaccinated, assuming that a safe and effective vaccination exists? And I guess the argument would be that as an employer, because it is your duty to provide a safe workplace, mm-hmm. then you correspondingly have a duty to ensure that your employees are vaccinated if a safe and effective vaccine exists. We don't have that situation yet.
But we very well could have this situation very soon.
We very well could. Now, moving to whether the government can require citizens to be vaccinated, I think that's an easier question.
Really?
And the reason, well, I have a secret weapon.
All right.
The reason I think that's an easier question is because more than 100 years ago, in 1905, the United States Supreme Court, in a case called Jacobson versus Massachusetts, held that a state criminal law that required all adult inhabitants of Cambridge to get a smallpox vaccine or be fined was not unconstitutional.
Wow.
The court explained in that decision, which is still followed, by the way, that an individual's liberty rights under the U.S. Constitution are not absolute and that the mandatory vaccination law was necessary to promote public health and safety. Now, if you think about that, that's not a whole lot different than what the states have done with regard to compulsory vaccination for school-aged children,
mm-hmm.
right? All mm-hmm. 50 states require vaccination for kids attending school. And as recently as 2019, last year, in the midst of a measles outbreak, New York City mandated that anyone over 6 months of age who lived, went to school in, or worked in several zip codes within the city had to be vaccinated against measles or be subject to a fine. So again, this concept about states, cities, counties, governmental entities mandating vaccines is not new. Although I think most people, when they hear that, would question whether the government has the right to do that.
Yes.
But going back as far as 1905 in Jacobson versus Massachusetts, which is still good law, the United States Supreme Court held that the state does have the right under certain circumstances to mandate that citizens be vaccinated. That was a smallpox case, but last year in New York, it was a measles case. And now we're dealing with COVID. So in my mind, all three of those present a public health issue. And I would submit that if the state of Arizona, for instance, mm-hmm. at some point, assuming an effective and safe vaccination is developed, mandates that Arizona residents over a certain age mm-hmm. be vaccinated or be subject to some penalty.
Yes.
Could be a monetary fine or a denial of the right to renew your driver's license yep. or, you know, some other penalty, yep. I would submit that they would have a good chance of having that upheld as being constitutional. And the argument for it, of course, would be that in order to promote the health and safety of the general population, it's necessary to essentially create a herd immunity. And this argument goes back to, in large part, all right, so what's the purpose of the vaccination? Well, the purpose of the vaccination is primarily to create herd immunity so that we aren't transmitting the virus one to the other because we have so many people who are susceptible to contracting it. In order to do that, the studies show that you need about 70% of the population to either have antibodies, which means that they've had it,
right.
or to be vaccinated, which creates the antibodies and they won't contract it. So, you know, you may, hopefully you don't have to mandate that people get vaccinated, but right now, according to a study that I saw, only about 2/3 of Americans say that they likely would get vaccinated. So maybe you do need to mandate it. We'll just have to wait and see.
Well, there are other implications. I mean, this to me seems to be where this next battleground is going. I mean, right now it's the battleground over shall we wear a mask or not. I can see this happening now with airlines requiring not only a mask, but a proof of vaccination when you go to check in, either at the airport counter or through TSA.
And, you know, that raises several interesting questions. The first thought that crossed my mind was, airline travel is not a right, it's a privilege.
Right.
Right. Right. So if you don't wish to submit to the requirement, then you don't get to exercise that privilege. But on the other hand, you could argue that if you deny someone the right to travel by air, you're essentially taking their property because in some cases it's necessary for people's livelihood. But then you also have the other consideration, which is, what about the people who have a legitimate religious objection to vaccinations or philosophical objection to vaccinations? Are you imposing your will on theirs and in some way discriminating against them on the basis of religion? Now, that's a question that is going to potentially be played out if the airlines do impose those type of requirements on their passengers.
All right, let's see if we can work one more in here. The state has filed a lawsuit seeking to force Tucson to alter our election dates. Right now, Tucson has kind of these, I would call them off-year elections that we have, but now they may have to be forced to join with kind of the regular every 2 year election. Maybe you can summarize this better than I can.
Let's call them odd year elections.
Thank you. Odd year.
Well, it's interesting. Tucson, perhaps uniquely, but certainly in a minority, holds elections on odd years.
Yes.
We had one in 2019, and the city council recently scheduled the 2021 primary for August 3rd and the general election for November 2021. Well, 2021 is an odd year. Mm-hmm. There is a state law that requires all elections to be held in even years.
Even years.
Even years.
Thank you.
So Mark Brnovich, our attorney general, just a week or so ago filed a lawsuit against the city of Tucson. And in that lawsuit, he contends on behalf of the state of Arizona that the city is violating the state statute, which requires elections be held in even numbered years. The city of Tucson, in response, is saying, well, maybe, yes, that's what the statute says, but we are one of 19 charter cities in the state of Arizona. And as a charter city, we have the right to govern our own local elections and our own local problems and our own local issues. So it's going to be a contest. The state of Arizona says it's a matter of statewide concern. State law governs. The city of Tucson says it's a matter of local concern. And the state has no business to telling us when we can hold our elections.
Going to the Supreme Court, perhaps?
It is before the Supreme Court now. That's where it's going to be decided.
All right. Don Luce, always a pleasure. Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Bill.
Don Luce of the Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Check out two of Don's books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are in their second printing. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. On behalf of Attorney Don Luce and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing and doing always a superlative job. Thanks, Tom. Have a great day, everybody.